Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly. Oh, before we get started, yep. Brinkwatch 2023. We are up to what the heck day is it now? It is day 251.
Wow, 251, yeah.
Yeah, so the three black halflings are still waiting, and perhaps they've probably had children since then, and you know, it's possible that there's a you're going to have a generational, because yeah, the gestation on hobbits is pretty short, right?
Is it?
I don't know.
That's not something I particularly want to discuss.
But Kyle, hashtag resign Kyle. We'll see if he survives the 50th anniversary. That's what we're waiting for. Maybe it'll be like Bilbo's birthday. He's going to just disappear.
111?
Yeah, disappear on the 50th anniversary of Wizards as a symbol.
Of that. Thank goodness. Yes. That's a lot closer than I was the 50th anniversary of Brinkwatch. I was like, it'll be pointless by then.
He'll be dead. But maybe he'll disappear. For the 50th anniversary event. Okay. Just to prove that he's not to be involved in this hobby. All right. So this week on The Weekly, the the AI art backlash. Let's pick it up from there. Yes. Right, AI art backlash for Terraforming Mars. Yep. Tainted Grail gets a TTRPG.
Oh, okay.
Ad Astra for Mutant Year Zero. Ooh. And Kohor's Cthulhu details come out.
Okay.
They're not quite at crowdfunding yet, but a little more on their D20.
All right.
So let's begin with what were they called? the company that produces Terraforming Mars.
Is it Stronghold?
Stronghold. Thank you. I thought there was some iron in there. Stronghold Games. Terraforming Mars creators will not be using AI for the next project.
Oh, for the next project.
Yes, okay. But what they're doing now doesn't seem to be... They just keep saying terrible things that don't encourage anyone to work with them. So I don't know how they're going to do this. Huh? So let's step into some first world, third world talk that they seem to be convinced exists. Okay. This is nice. So, and some of the names associated with Stronghold is Frix Games, F-R-Y-X, Games.
Frix, okay.
And that involves Enoch Frixilius.
Okay.
So this may be, Terraforming Mars may have been created by Martians. I'm not exactly sure. But they defended their use of AI on Facebook, as you do. Did state that they won't be using AI for their next project.
Okay, they defended.
Yes, the current use.
The current use, yes. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Did they actually defend it, or did they just say we've used it?
Well, yeah, here's what they said. So the full, there's a full, if you go to Facebook for the full transcript, and basically, so we heard Travis Worthington did the interview that kind of kicked this off, mm-hmm. one of the creative leads. Also in that defending the use of AI on their Kickstarter. So their Kickstarter, I guess was titled More Terraforming Mars, raised $200 million or broke the $200 million mark almost. And, then we get this odd statement from Frixilius and his brother Isaac, Isaac and Enoch. So I don't know if they were born in this century. They may be ancient people. Generating artwork using AI. So no one has lost their job or is being replaced by AI. So he stated, quote, illustrators will lose jobs and there's no way to turn back the time on this technology. And the Frix Games itself employs numerous brothers and sisters. So I want the whole family tree. I want to see all these names for the Frixilius clan. Okay. Numerous brothers and sisters. I have no idea their relationship of this company, but they're the ones that are talking. And so they basically Worthington said that they are not attempting to deal with the ethics of using AI. The long-term impact is going to be, you know, some illustrators will lose their jobs. But basically, they're moving forward. This is the wonderful part of this quote. They're moving forward with their next project, a cooperative Viking game called Fates, which will have a Western illustrator. We spared no expense, you know, so this guy, we're going to pay this Western illustrator the big bucks.
Mm-hmm.
So we have paid tens of thousands of dollars to those have those illustrations made, and not even by some Eastern European illustrator or Asian illustrator, but actually by a Western, someone living in the Western world will be doing all the illustrations. That's crazy expensive. So yikes. Let's be careful here. I know you weren't born in this century, but let's kind of update your thinking about like,
the why global... would you even say this?
I don't
know. Why would you even say this? Why would you make like, okay. My feeling about AI aside, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you got taken to task for using AI and people are kind of right. I understand. Okay. Saying, okay. Artists are losing their job, but whatever. Okay. Yeah, we messed up. Our next project is 100% human mm-hmm. art, and we've paid tens of thousands of dollars for the illustrations. That's all you had to say, right? Right? That's all you had to say. Like,
but it's a Western illustrator. Don't you want to emphasize the fact that this person is of Western heritage?
I don't know. Apparently you did. Why you would do that, I really don't know. Like,
yeah, that's like, interesting did, move.
Did you want to say that it's a Viking game?
Oh, and, yeah, right? That's, yeah, right.
Like, okay, like, you saying that, yep, okay, it started to sound bad, right? Like, if you go, okay, thinking about it from another perspective, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sure, there are some types of games, not types of games, there are some settings where you having someone of different ethnicity, different descent, mm-hmm. right? You can go, why are you illustrating this? Right? Why are you doing this? Right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like writing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you write about, it's especially like Asia recently, where it's like, anyone on this team Asian? No? What are you doing? Right?
Right. Right.
So maybe I can understand the intent yes. of saying, okay, we have a yeah. game. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely say away from using the word authentic, right?
It's authentic. Nope, it's pure of blood.
No. See, you don't want to go there. Right? Right?
Sorry.
It's just like, okay, we have a game. It's inspired by this region, this culture, and mm-hmm. we've gotten someone from that region culture to
right.
illustrate it, right? Maybe that's what they were trying to say.
I don't think so.
That's me being generous to this statement,
right? I guess that's true, because you could, you know, reverse that kind of cultural appropriation thing and say, why are Koreans drawing Vikings? But, you know, the same way that why are, you know, Western illustrators.
Okay, like, I've been out of magic for a long time, but, like, within the past 2 or 3 years, there was a Viking-themed kind of mm-hmm, set, mm-hmm. and there was some mm-hmm. uproar about, like, what are all these colored people doing in the setting, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's kind of different, but, like, it can kind of be the same
thing.
Yeah. So you... Yeah. Mm. Anyway, that doesn't seem to be what they're saying here. So yikes.
Yeah. So I don't know. And I haven't heard of, I just heard of Stronghold Games and then the, Indie Games or whatever, that is like kind of the parent company, Indie Game Studios. So yeah, the owner. So I don't know where, maybe they are the parent company or the owner of many of these small studios. So they should keep these guys quiet. I don't think Enoch needs to be on Facebook.
We'll see. Facebook's pretty old, right?
Yeah, right. That's true. Maybe it's the only technology that is familiar with. But anyhow, their next product is 100% human-made graphics. And Aryan of origin.
Yeah, see, that's the thing you don't want to say.
Oh, sorry. I'll ask them to remove that. That's from me.
Yeah.
So weird. Yeah, but it's just weird to say not those Eastern European.
And like, that's it. Like
as if there's no legitimacy in like painters of Eastern.
I don't know what the right. Ouch. Yikes. Mm. Yeah, Enoch ought to not be allowed on Facebook.
No, let's.
I don't know.
Yeah, moving on. But let's. Okay, so our war against technology and the upcoming
Butlerian jihad all the way.
Yes, all right. It's coming.
I understand why they smashed those fucking computers. Yeah.
Yes, we will. We will be very familiar with those motivations very soon. But a humorous aspect to AI is they've just found that Warhammer has been scraped by AI, and there was somebody on Reddit or something that did a very funny, they asked ChatGPT to write like 40K rules.
Okay.
And it gave them like a 30 or maybe even like 60 step like phase of combat to determine.
Hey, you know what can't be any worse than what Games Workshop actually puts out? Zing.
So yeah, so the ChatGPT it understood the vibe of like what overcomplicated Warhammer. But in this case, it was the Bloomberg GPT that has it's discovered that they have scraped 15 pirated Warhammer books to be included in both Meta's Llama and Bloomberg's Bloomberg GPT.
We're talking fiction books.
Yes, yeah, so we're talking to the text of Black Library's books. So some Horus Heresy and some 40K, which is pretty funny. If that's going to be part, if the grimdark 41st millennium is going to be part of ChatGPT, it's pretty funny. So,
you're going to be using ChatGPT and it's going to spit out something blah 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 for the emperor,
right? Yeah, okay. Exactly. But that's actually on the low side compared to some other publishers. Yeah. So, they're talking about the database contained 170,000 books of totally unauthorized copyright stolen scrapes. So, very HarperCollins, Penguin Random, Oxford University Press, everybody got their stuff scraped and added to this this database. So pretty depressing that this just keeps going on. But if they're gonna eventually piss off somebody big enough to do something about it, although not a lot of people are bigger than Microsoft, so it'll take a couple of big guys to kind of team up. But just some of the titles, they listed some of the authors and books. So Dan Abnett's Legion was one of the ones in there. John French's Ahriman Exile. Some funny, just some interesting, C.L. Werner's Blood for the Blood God. That should add some interesting flavor.
I don't think I've read any of these. Dude, I haven't read that many Warhammer 40,000 novels, but I don't think I've read any of these.
Yeah, so it's just a kind of a random sampling. Like, it's probably just some PDFs, like converted EPUBs or something that were just uploaded online that their little crawlers found. So that was pretty pretty funny. So it's the book three kind of scrape that these tools are using to access this. Yeah, so there'll be all kinds of fun things included in our dark AI future. Jeez. But so I guess that will make the Black Library kind of immortal if it's been incorporated into AI already. So we'll see. So moving on to more dark fantasy. So the board game Tainted Grail by Awakened Realms is getting a tabletop RPG. So they've already released a bunch of expansions for this. And so it's a dark fantasy co-op board game and very storytelling, like very narrative. You're like reading text. You're basically
Gloomhaven-esque? At least in maybe
it's theme and scope. Yeah, no hexes. I think you're just moving into zones and areas and like confronting, like you're fighting, like the combat's pretty brutal and you're fighting things in different zones, but it's not strategic in that way where you're like, positioning and trying to get the timing of attacks for doing some bonus damage. But it's based on the Legends of King Arthur, kind of a twisted, dark version of King Arthur. And now they're getting an RPG. So the original game is Tainted Grail, Fall of Avalon.
Okay.
That debuted in 2019. I thought it was earlier than that. And basically, there's a strange fog over the whole world and called the Weirdness with a Y. Okay. And you move across the board and uncover, you reach these points that, kind of keep it at bay, and you encounter strange creatures, but it's all very Arthurian themed.
Okay.
So they call it a punishing, dice-free gameplay with combat encounters and social dilemmas. Yeah, so in the story itself, it kind of like you make a choice and then it closes off options. And so all this was written by a Polish fantasy author, Krzysztof Piskorski. And so it was his kind of dark Arthurian setting. And so they're going to continue that in this tabletop game, which will be called the first expansion, the spinoff, was called Tainted Grail Kings of Ruin. So the new tabletop RPG is Tainted Grail Song of a Dying World. And so it will follow, and it'll include aspects of the board game, like the weird, and then what they added, a plague called the Red Death that exists in the game setting. So it's all fun.
Setting just sounds like it sucks.
It's fun. So a gothic medieval, and the world is, the system that they will use is the gothic medieval RPG Shadows of Esteron. They'll use that system to run the RPG. The characters will be known as the Guardians of Avalon. They'll have domains and disciplines, five attributes, and ways, which will be their kind of motivations and moral standing. So maybe kind of role play assists and things you can go against or go
with. Why have I heard Shadows of Esteron before?
I don't know. Yeah, that didn't sound familiar. Hmm. Yeah, didn't sound familiar to me. But yeah, they're building it on that system. And there'll be narrative arcs and an ascension system, which I think is basically their leveling. Hmm. So a nice deadly RPG, possibly, and
just on principle, I'm going to have to check it out because it's not 5e big, yes. Right?
Mm. Yeah, good point. And an interesting little quote from when they're talking about the system: character psyches will be put under strain, risking fear or frenzy if not overcome. So, oh, here's the Asterion. The maker of Asterion is Studio Agate. Studio Agate, which they're going to do a crowdfunding campaign on both Kickstarter and BackerKit in November.
Okay.
So we get to see more details about that. So they're going to do a core rulebook with the basic rules, backgrounds, and everything, and then a deluxe version. So the core rulebook will be $50, $150 for the collector's edition that will have a screen, dice, maps, and all the bells and whistles and extra stuff. So if you like that game and kind of the stories that they told in the board game itself and wanted to tell them yourself, this might be a good opportunity. Plus, you're going to have a ton of miniatures to use for the game. So they keep doing that. They keep, like, you know, if you do it an RPG about a board game, it there's incentive then to back it because look at all the miniatures you have sitting there.
Why not?
Yeah.
And I also, I've kind of said this before, I think, or something similar. If there's already a board game, and if the board game is like kind of narrative with these like quests or objectives and stuff, like that would give players familiar with the board game an idea of what to do in the TTRPG.
Right.
It wouldn't necessarily give someone like me who would like jump onto the TTRPG any idea of what to do. So hopefully something like that is included in the book. But if it's successful, I guess it also gives publishers an idea of, okay, well, the board game had these quests. Let's translate that or port that over or use that to inspire a kind of scenario booklet or something for the TTRPG. So I see the appeal of doing this.
There's an interesting back and forth between that, too, because recently the I think it was at Gen Con, the Artus Telsarian made the announcement that their Witcher RPG is on hold because the studio that does the video game, which is what the RPG is based on, it's not based on the books, is in development for like Witcher 4, and it's going to be 2 years, so they don't want to share any of those details. So they basically have no source to base their game on, nothing to write on and nothing to expand on. So they have to wait 2 years before they do anything. So they said, the game is on hold. We don't know the future, and because they're going to probably have to renew a license.
Okay.
But I thought that was interesting. So the same thing might happen with board games, too. They're like, wait, we're working on the next sequel. We can't share that with you yet for your game, so wait until we do it ourselves.
Interesting. Like, that's something I hadn't considered with a licensed property. That was, I guess, kind of still active,
right?
Because, I mean, there must be something, or if there is something in like that agreement, like, our Telsorian Games is probably prevented from saying, okay, well, we're going to make our own stuff, right?
Right.
You're like, no.
Because they could move faster. Yeah, that, you know, they could release that and then spoil, you know.
Well, I understand, like, if it was based on something the studio was doing, but if the game studio just went, we're going to make our own, right? Then they're probably prevented from doing that, right?
So, Yeah, that's true. There's guidelines, and they can't, they can't
just do whatever they want.
Yeah, they can take things in various ways because they have to have continuity probably with whatever they're doing. Yeah, so I thought that, that's an interesting. So talking about things that are still being supported.
Talking about things and stuff, right?
Things and stuff. That's a good segue. Yeah. So things that are still being supported and so happily supported, we just heard that Mutant Year Zero is going into space. They're getting support with a new expansion called Ad Astra. So you can pre-order that now. And when this release comes, you're also going to see the release of the all of the Year Zero core books. Because things like Mechatron are completely out of print. So they're impossible to get unless you want to pay crazy prices.
Right.
So it's great they're going to go back and reprint reprint those books and that they're supporting. Because this is their Mutant Year Zero, their take on Mutant, the 80s Swedish role-play game, and what they created their D6 system for. So, it's nice to see that they're still supporting this. But Ad Astra, the little blurb they have about it is, through the tiny portals of the space capsule, you see the city hanging weightlessly beneath the stars, like a huge hanging mobile over Earth, the poisoned cradle of humanity. Drawing closer, it becomes clear that there's something wrong with this star city. You float past large holes, torn wires, and cracked satellite dishes. It seems the apocalypse reached all the way to the heavens. I thought that was pretty flavorful.
It is. And gloomy.
Yeah, right. And so your mutants, your person that is suffering on the dying Earth is now going to suffer in the dying space, in the vacuum of space. So yeah, from the devastated surface of Earth into orbit. So if you pre-order now with Free League, they'll of course send you the early access PDF immediately, so you can take a look at what they're doing. And it was nice. They announced that they're going to reprint all of their core books. So That's Mechatron, and then the anthropomorphic animals one, Gene Lab, I think.
Yeah. That sounds
And really fun. Like, I really thought they did a nice job with that. So basically, you know, the core book is, you know, human mutations, and then it's robots that have gone, like, how the kind of AI and robot world got corrupted, and then taking mutations even further with, you know, anthropomorphic animal characters. Yeah. And they really did. If you don't have a good sense of the setting, if you take a look at the trailer for the PC game that they did based on Mutant Year Zero, it gives you a really good idea of the kind of the survivalist flavor, like what still exists and how people organized after the apocalypse. It's a really nice setting. But Ad Astra has been written by Jens Alms and illustrated by Kim W. Anderson, an award-winning comics writer and artist, putting this together. So, so it should look and be written very well. So, Mutant Year Zero won the Silver Ennie in 2015 for Best Rules and six Ennie nominations, and then for the 2015 Games Expo won Best Roleplay Game. Yeah. So it's well worth taking a look at if you've never seen it before, and if you've played it in the past, this is yet another thing to do with your characters. So if you have some robots or animals, send them into orbit. So they're getting painfully close to the Mutant Chronicles. Like, eventually, okay, now people have left the Earth, and your characters have left the Earth. Have they formed tribes? Have they formed tribes yet? Have they harnessed the irradiated animals to... we want the Sons of Rasputin can't be far behind. The original Mutant was published in 84, and the new version, Mutant Year Zero, was 2014. That's crazy, yeah. So
it's only 10 years ago.
No, but I mean, they revived it, and this was for the English speaking market as well, because they produced it in both languages. So yeah, I like that text that they kind of set stuff up with. And they also said that this will work as a direct continuation. If you played the Path of Eden campaign for the original Mutant Year Zero, this works as a direct continuation of that. Okay. So they kind of like maybe have some narrative hooks and things that take you straight
into space.
Yeah, into space, into a dead space station with a lot of horrible things aboard. So I think that's a fun thing to do. And they also released, I didn't hear much about it, but they, after Gene Lab, which I believe is what it was called, they did a City in the Sky, and I'm not sure how connected that was, but they did kind of a I'm blanking on the name, but a city of survival, you know, like people that aren't just scrounging around on Earth. I can't remember what that was called. Hmm. Someone in the chat is probably saying it right now. Yeah, Gene Lab Alpha. Thank you, Matt.
That's
right. That was the name of the and the one, it was like Elysium or something. But it was the system again. And I'm not sure if it was pre-apocalypse or post-apocalypse, but it was this.
Maybe it could be both.
Yeah, perfect city. Yeah, this perfect city. So yeah, there's a big variety of settings and character types, and I think it's really fun that you can play. So basically, you could play these different settings and then pick your favorite character. Did you like your raccoon? Did you like your robot? Or did you like your guy with the crab claws? Who do you want to take into the next part of the campaign?
None of them.
So available for pre-order now. You get the PDF, and then it's coming out later this year. So that's Ad Astra by Free League for Mutant Year Zero. And finally, we got some details. I've been hearing about this forever, and they've been doing like various promotion, and I think there was like playtesting you can get involved with, but the Cohors Cthulhu by Modiphius is soon to come to Kickstarter, and it's going to be using their 2D20 system.
Okay.
So this is another original setting, another Cthulhu original setting for Modiphius. So not a licensed IP, so that, you know, this is something they're going to care about and probably keep supporting because it's theirs. You know, they own it. So the 2D20 system, they call a cinematic RPG rule set, and originally created when they did the Mutant Chronicles, their first title that Modiphius released using this system. And people, you know, I think there's a lot of love or hate with 2D20. I've been enjoying it. It works really well with the Star Trek setting.
Well, like you said, so Mutant Chronicles was the first 2D20. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't know what was next, but then we've also seen like Conan, mm-hmm. John Carter of Mars, Star Trek.
There's an Infinity.
Oh, there's an Infinity 2D20. Yeah, Infinity. Okay.
I think that was a pretty early one too.
Like, and I don't know the timeline, but like you've talked before about how you can see kind of the system like progress and kind of get refined with each of these games. So I have to think that this kind of being like the latest one, Cohors Cthulhu, is going to use all the stuff they kind of learn through the development of previous games. So hopefully the system would be pretty decent.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope that this is another, you know, they got the system to fit the setting well, and it's another kind of, you know, evolutionary step in the 2D20.
I do have to wonder what the stats are going to be like.
Yeah, they talk a little bit about that. So this setting is a setting of ancient Rome. So you can either play, you know, Germanic tribes or senators on the floors of the Senate in Rome, and the they will have a new attribute called gravitas, which will be added, allowing the characters to make arguments and act with seriousness and dignity. Which is uncommon for RPG players. And so earlier versions of 2D20, of course, have had bullets and firearms, and this is going to be focused, like Conan, going to be focused on melee weapons. It will still include bows and spears and javelins, but they're going to include things like reach and guard in melee combat to give it a little bit more strategy. So their previous original property that uses the system as well was the Actun Cthulhu, which is kind of Cthulhu weird World War II. And Conan Adventures in an Age Undreamed Of used it. That I need to go back to that, but originally looking at that, that was one of those, like, Star Trek really did work how they refined 2D20. Conan didn't feel it was like representing that setting. It wasn't, I think John Carter did a better job with the pulpy kind of craziness of the setting. And Conan, and there's a lot of people that love that game, so we get comments every time we mention it. But it just didn't feel, it felt generic. It felt a little just too generic.
I think I took advantage of like the going out of, or the lost license sale, and I think I maybe have PDFs of like all the Conan 2D20. Haven't looked at it. Remember when I looked at like the first one, I was kind of disappointed to see that the stats were very D&D-esque, right? Like strength, agility, or all that kind of stuff, where like John Carter of Mars, it was like bravery, valor, I forget the other one,
Like, but it was more so. And I think it's interesting because the influence on game design is not only mechanical and in your kind of your new theories or new approaches to mechanics, but it's also economic. So maybe their early 2D20s, they weren't seeing the popularity they hoped for, and so that, let's make Conan a little bit more like 5e, so people, it feels more familiar, more comfortable, and that may have been their kind of, you know, their motivation or their guidance. So yeah, there's both economic and like, you know, aesthetic and mechanical reasons. So that's interesting to see that they did that. That's like, we want this to be recognizable to people. And then with John Carter, like, screw that, let's just do Super Pulp and have
well, that's kind of what it is. I still want to make that game or something, like, oh no, it's that asshole John Carter. John Carter in the books, like, he's the protagonist in looking at a modern lens. Like, no, dude is an asshole, right?
No, but I think that's the intention that, I mean, because this is like, you know, we're talking like turn of the century. Turn of the century writing. And so it's pretty amazing. And I think maybe, I haven't read much Tarzan, but I think Tarzan does this too, where it's like this rationalist approach where you're coming from you're coming from a Confederate soldier where slavery is normal into a setting where he's got to like reassess all of his values. He's confronted with that. And I think that was like, you know, the author's intention to try to make him, you know, just kind of understand, you know, why his, so what he comes into is like romantic ideas and everything don't function, and the way that the races of Mars, you know, resolve things, he has to adapt to. But I think that's interesting, and I like that. But it's the same, that thing carried over, like when the characterization of Superman, and there's so many characters that, you know, kind of are the that, you know, the John Carter's their ancestor, where, you know, Superman could have just effed things up on Earth. He could have, you know, I want that wife and this, you know, this kingdom, and I am now war master of Earth. And so the way that, and even though it was, you know, it was a very warring culture on Mars, and he became warlord of Mars.
Yeah, he did.
But it was, there was like compassion and rationality to what he, well, we don't agree on
not
that.
I do not agree at all.
But
anyway, back to Cohort's Cthulhu.
Yes, right? Cohort's Cthulhu. Yes.
I'm curious. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about the stats. Mm. Since it is Cthulhu, I mean, I'm thinking about like the Cthulhu mythos stories where it doesn't matter how much of a physical badass you are, you're just going to get your shit wrecked. So I would it sounds like they're going with melee weapons and stuff like that. So there's going to be some combat. I mean, you probably will going to have to like fight cultists or other stuff. Yeah. But I would almost want to see the focus be on, cool, you are senators. What are you going to do with this, right? Because usually the correct answer when you go up against Cthulhu is run, right?
Right, yep.
Or be lucky enough to find like some magic thing that at the cost of your sanity puts things back, right?
Yeah,
so I don't know.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So they do talk about so hidden facets of the player characters in this new system, and things being so campfire tales, secret truths, and hidden talents.
Okay.
So there will be things that make the make the characters a little more interesting than your straightforward role playing characters. And they have the choice of leaving aspects of the characters undefined, and then you know through play they're discovered as the character is. Involved. So I like there's some games that have been doing that lately, and even Star Trek does that as well, because you have values in Star Trek, and if you can't quite, if you're not, don't have a really strong idea of like who your character is at the beginning, you can create them as you're interacting with the kind of moral decisions and ethics of the different adventures, and then kind of and add those in. So I think that's an interesting way to play, because a lot of people don't have a really strong, this is the archetype I'm using to build this character. It's based on, you know, this fictional character. I have a really strong image. If you don't, you can, through gameplay, you know.
No, play, I like that, because, I mean, yeah, sometimes you have a really strong idea. Sometimes you're just like, I don't know. I want to kind of find out. Or other times, the flip side, you're like, I built them like this, and they're playing completely different, right? Yes. Like that's all happened. So like I like the let's find out kind of approach through play approach. So
and another thing they mentioned, so Rome being so large and so absorbing to so many cultures, so they're going to give you a whole range of, like, you know, everything in the Roman Empire is possible as a character.
Please don't attach stats to that.
Yeah, you're right. And there will be some. So they specifically say there is no caste system that, you know, indicates that anything is, any one caste is better than another, but characters will probably, that will be a, you know, a part of character creation.
Maybe that's maybe not gravitas, but something.
Yeah, right? So something.
There's got to be. Because you're either going to have to play it like kind of, I think I would say, close to historically accurate, where like, nope, these are the castes or these are the class systems, and navigating between them is going to be part of the challenge of gameplay.
Right, right.
Or I think you got to be a bit more like, okay, it was this way, but we're going to ignore that for playability. Mm-hmm. However, there's going to be like a status stat or something, right, or some reputation kind of like
something,
kind of meta currency where you can kind of spend it. You either got to go one or the other, I would argue.
That's a good point. And they're mentioning also that there will be a fortune and momentum mechanic, so similar to previous 2d20s. And I think momentum works well. I think it's interesting, and once you kind of, once it kind of clicks, because that happened with John Carter, is like, I need to roll for something, and it's risky because things could go very wrong, but I need to be generating this currency, so once things get bad, I have things to spend, like I'm more capable early on. So I think it's fun to once the players get their characters into that economy, it makes a lot of sense, and it feels like it builds in a nice way.
It's kind of like it sounds like the fate point mechanic thing, where it's like once you get it, you're like, nope, without this kind of economy, the game kind of falls flat. So let's all work together so that everything's kind of flowing around.
Right, that's true. And and failed roles and stuff and complications are interesting. They're not just like, oh, we just ran into a wall and now we're
didn't do it.
And so you'll be facing off against mythos cults in the second century Rome in Cohors Cthulhu. And I thought for sure, this seemed like the early announcements, they're also talking about a miniatures game for this as well, because I remember the way that they showed it looked like and Modiphius loves miniatures, so I'm sure in this campaign we're going to see something because they've made miniatures for everything so far. Star Trek and John Carter, everything's gotten miniatures. And they produce them for the Kickstarter and the crowdfunding, but what's nice is they stick around on their web store as STLs.
Okay.
And sometimes they go like a Humble Bundle or whatever. Right. They'll give you a set of those. So if you're interested in any of those settings and just want the miniatures, Modiphius is still selling them in digital form. Yeah, so I'm curious about this setting and how they're going to handle it, because it is a very unique Cthulhu setting. It's odd. And, you know, they did World War II, and now they're going second century Roman Empire. So, yeah, I think there may be some fun and kind of inspired, you know, kind of things that can happen. And I guess, you know, cults and stuff make sense because, you know, Rome especially was like, okay, we're going to try to install our religion over yours. You can practice your religion, but you got to do this too. And
it's called this now.
Right. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how Cthulhu worship figures into Rome's plans. But yeah, so that's coming out. You can sign up for a notification right now. It's the campaign hasn't started. And right. I'll put a link to the page where it's coming soon. All right, so that's going to do it for this week.
Yeah.
So where can people find you?
Not on X.
No.
Okay, I'm not deleting my account, but end of the month, I'm just not using it anymore.
But right? How far are you into the biography of the brave little Dutch boy?
Not at all.
Oh, and you haven't started? Yeah. Oh, I want to get to the part where he impregnates the CEO of one of his companies and thinks that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Moving on. So Instagram, Threads, and oh yeah, Blue Sky. Mm-hmm. And that's HiveMind, HYVEMYND, where not a lot, except I'm still doing every once in a while little pixel art dungeons just because I feel the need to make something, right?
Nice.
So how about you?
I'm kind of still doing. So it's been very busy. My schedule's been terrible the last couple of weeks. So the first time I've missed 2 weeks in a row for art live stream. Yeah. So that I'll be back. So yeah, it was four years and I haven't missed a week and now I've missed two in a row.
Right, but you've earned it.
Right? Yes. Yeah. It's summer, right? Late summer. Abuse Cartoons, on YouTube and Twitter, YouTube and Twitch. And I draw my single panel gag cartoon, Domestic Abuse. And you can read that cartoon at gocomics.com/domesticabuse and Abuse Cartoons on social media of various places.
Well, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yes. And if you'd like to support what we're doing with the weekly, first you can visit upturntable.com, which is the website where the video and the audio and everything exists, as well as the other things we do, unboxings, actual plays, all that good stuff. And to support us directly, consider becoming a weakling.
Yes, the strongest of all supporters.
And thank you to the weaklings that already
thank
exist.
Thank you to the weaklings that already exist.
Patreon.com/upturntable to become a weakling or any other various supporters. And you can connect with us there. And they're actually starting focused chat groups and stuff within Patreon. So so more directly we can communicate. Because right now I think we're just using like Discord mostly.
Right.
But we'll have an Patreon patron chat so you can, all the weaklings can assemble and tell us what
weaklings
they hated.
Assemble!
And, so UpturnTable on all social media. And that's where you can find us and tell us what you think. And thank you to all the patrons and members, YouTube members as well. So click join below this video or anywhere on our YouTube channel to support us there. And you get access to the same member content. But the only thing that's not available, Patreon gives you the RSS feed of this audio. So you can hear the full conversation. Yep. Yes, full conversation, unedited, whether that's good or not.
You decide.
Yes, and so that'll be it for this week. Yep. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.